You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with the poet, Kenneth G. Bostock. Kenneth, thanks for being with me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, Kenneth, I want to talk about your poems, and I know many of them are quite long, which is why I can't ask you to read an entire poem of 88 pages on this particular series. But I wanted to begin with asking you about what could you read? And I know you talked a little bit about works in progress before we started this interview. So maybe what are you working on right now? And can you read something from that?
Yeah, no, I've been working on a series of it's a cyclical poem about travel, geography, geology. And it's sort of a research on the epistemology of grammar. So for some reason, I've been drawn to Iceland as a place. And I think it's just the fact that you can perceive this, you know, that's that border of the tectonic plates. So I'm going to read something it's a work in process. Actually, it's just notes at the moment. And it's going to be one of the poems from my new book. So I'm just going to read it. And so here I go. Change here is prismatic. In the meaningless shit rush I sent in my breaking the tectonic skid, snapshot, gone in the beginning, the memory of moss, timelessness is or fissure, undulation, perhaps, light that skins the reverberation of light that touches talk, that touches light. Inchoate, mythopoeia, over and under woven, scrap language, scrap reaction, bound to the endless light of fractal summer light, Eliasson's harpa skin, grief, repeats itself. Odin, Corvin, Raven, split sense, stretch hands, the neologism, fluviophile, gymnasium, anagrams, runes and runic, blink, 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 soft sway, hurling the meaning to sense and entropy, the interstitial, the love. Yes, it hurts, the golden June snow cap of Helka, mumbling reflection of the reflection, on the lax trail back to Reykjavik. And when my right side is shattered, pull the mat, pull the meat, surface told, I can feel the weight of the air, velour. So this is still fragments. It's still what I do is I write and rewrite and go through a series of iterations, trying to work with language in a sense that I try to explore the frontier, the edge between meaning and sense. Poetry is an act of resistance in that way.
An act of resistance in what way? Exactly, between kind of
it's
worlds.
An act of it's an act of resistance against convention, but also against the put it this way, against narrative, against description. It's trying to unveil that hidden aspect of language, which is an underlying sort of current in our day-to-day speech, in our, you know, the way we communicate amongst each other, but it's hidden. So that act of resistance, being a rebel in a way, a language rebel, is what drives me to write poetry.
And what was happening before then? Yeah, I'm sorry, go on, yeah.
No, in that sense, and it's that act of resistance that drives me to write long series of poems instead of just snapshots or collections. You know, I'm against the idea of collections of poems. It is something that it's kind of the literary norm, and they get lost. And I'd rather concentrate on longer works.
That's true. They do get lost, and then you end up having, as you say, these collections, or people have their most popular poems or something that they read often. But in your case also, it's meant to be read a different way. I mean, when before we started the interview and I was asking you to read a few poems, of course that's impossible because they are so long. So part of your act of resistance or the way you're crafting these also changes the way you present them, right? Or I mean, do you do readings or?
I'm very reluctant to readings. You know, I do them when they're part of a performance space, you know, or piece, and I invite people to read with me instead of me being the performer. I invite others to reinterpret the work. I also like to have. I'm actually exploring now translating everything into a sort of computer voice simulation and have the computer read the words as other people read them at the same time. So you create this sense of multiple layers of and explore language, those borders of language. And I'm very, very, I'm not saying that I'm shy, but it's not something that I enjoy reading in public. So I concentrate on poetry as object, as book. It's almost a frontier of conceptual art. My books, I take care of a very crafted the typeset, the paper. It always has to be special recycled paper and work with designers to get the feel of the book right. So it's an object in the end. So it's more about an introspective operation than the sort of idea of belonging to the literary world.
I understand that, and I like that. When the fragment you just read was obviously referencing Iceland, and not only, you know, in my mind, kind of memory and senses and geography, but also the history of Iceland. I may be wrong because I don't know a lot about Iceland, but it seemed that was. And just correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a lot of research in there into the geographies that you say you're exploring in terms of their myths, their legends, their heroes, their past. Is that, am I reading that or understanding that correctly? And is
yeah,
that
it, it that... is. It is. It's a land that has always or a place that has always fascinated me since I first visited it. You know, I've gone to Iceland 5 times now, and. I've gone in different circumstances, some joyful, some a little bit sad. So it is a place for experimentations from my point of view. It's a base that I just the idea of opening oneself to nature again, it's very hard, and it's a place that allows it. But at the same time, it's a very familiar place. You know, you're going to walk around and you're going to find the odd corners, but you're still going to find, you know, chain restaurants and cafes and, you know, museums, the typical thing that would attract tourists. So it's that dichotomy, which it's very interesting. It's very interesting to me. Instead of saying, okay, I'm going to do a completely sort of adventure, you know, it's a retreat.
I visited Iceland once and thought it was quite an extraordinary place. One of the things I heard there, and I believe this was true, was that some of the state roads on occasion were rerouted to because there were gnomes known to live in a particular place. Which struck me as extraordinary and amazing and kind of beautiful and almost magical. I've never heard of anything like that from any other culture existing today.
No, yeah, that's what is fascinated about the place. You know, you have this idea. You know, it's a land that needs to be rebuilt. You need to struggle against nature in Iceland. And all this underlying sort of magic it's a day to day for people living in Iceland. So it's an incredible place, and it's a real source of inspiration. I wrote a book, which is a very crafted and minimal object. It's called Three Icelandic Poems. I wrote that 8 years ago, and I'm now revisiting again and writing four Icelandic poems. And and what I read before was a fragment of one of these Icelandic poems. And I think at the end I can read some of the published ones, and that we can close the interview with that. But I also would like to discuss a little bit about my inspirations. You know, I'm constantly referring to Mallarmé and this sort of spatial aspect of language for some reason, and through Mallarmé, I'm constantly rereading John Cage at the moment, and it's incredible the way he could wrestle music out of nothing. It's a true inspiration. It's also very nomadic. Yeah. Joan Cage is a very nomadic thinker. It's something that relates to the way I approach my writing.
Well, in terms of how you approach your life, though, as a nomad in the literal sense, where are you based, and are you always taking trips out from there?
No, I've been based in London. I've lived in studied in New York, lived in Mexico, lived in Scandinavia for a while in Copenhagen. Obviously I have a day job, and you have to it's a job that complements my writing, and the life, the nomad life, is also nomadic in terms of the heart. And so maybe that's why I'm drawn to Iceland. It's this sort of interstitial space. Not all my writing is about Iceland. You know, I had other books. I had a massive life-changing event a couple of years ago. And I wrote about that in a hospital bed, and writing it on an iPhone. And again, it was an epic poem. Currently, I'm based in London, but you never know.
And do you want to talk about that life-changing event? I mean, that sounds kind of powerful, and it was pivotal in terms of your work, perhaps.
Well, I would rather mention the book. It's a book that I wrote. It's called Gamut. And it really is, you know, the life-changing event that just happened from one day to another. And the funny thing, it was linked to the eruption of Eyjafjallajökull, Icelandic volcano, 6 years ago. I was meant to fly out. I was going to California, and I didn't fly. All the flights were interrupted here in Europe. And then that sort of day, I went from being truly healthy to being completely paralyzed due to a cerebral hemorrhage from an underlying condition which I didn't know I had. So that changed my life completely and changed my way of approaching poetry.
But completely, you know, paralyzed. You're talking about being physically paralyzed.
Yeah, physically paralyzed. I had to relearn how to walk and how to do everything from scratch. It took me a couple of years for rehabilitation. But I wrote this in the meantime. I was writing this book. It's called Gamut. And it really talks about that process of refining, of re-encountering your mind. It's something that I can't reread. It's okay if other people read, but I always it's something that is very powerful and very painful, and I always sort of keep it under. I had to write it and put it out there, but I am very shy about reading the book. But I so I'm going to stick to reading Icelandic poems, if that's okay.
Okay. So there was one other piece you wanted to read before we go, wasn't there?
Yes, there was another piece. It's one of those, it's part of of this first series of book of poems about Iceland. It's called 41. Anise had what gathers similarity, from nominal night at the airport terminal to the mumbling twilight, the balance considered for analogy and then the object. The blue glow of the NATO airbase to the west and the damp haze of the hidden ocean threat. The parallel line of pouring sodium lights, blending with the lights and headlights of the shoreline offer, implying cracks, the lava, pebble beaches for the winter's evening. They're abstract enough and assign some listlessness to the Reykjanes Peninsula weekend. This unseen ocean is the rate. It is momentum. Nothing on the radio. It is gender without presence, with no room for memory or concept need. Too smooth for junction, profit, even ambivalence. Its darkness has no meaning. Stripped, the least, and some traffic. Yeah, that's it.
And when will this book come out? What's the progress for this book now in terms of how it will take shape? Because as you're saying, you're not only finishing the poems for the next book, but then there's the craft of putting the book together.
Yeah, I just published a book this year called Hyaloid. It's my latest book, and that was out in June. In May. So I was just very recent. And series of Icelandic poems. I think that by October this year, end of October or early November, I'm aiming to put them out there. It's very simple title. The first series of poems were three Icelandic poems. These will be four Icelandic poems.
And I like that. And when you put them out there, how do you do that? That's not through traditional publishing, obviously. These are small edition books.
Yeah, it's small edition.
Like you're very careful with.
Yeah, small editions using funding from different sources. And some time ago, I set up I was having a conversation with an artist friend of mine, Pedro Reyes in Mexico, about independent press. So with help, we set up some operation for independent press. I had to put it on pause while I was in rehab, but now we have it working full on. And we have a distribution we sell through Amazon if required. It's a bit of a mess, but it's the really only way to get it out there in a globalized sense. But locally in London, I distributed in specialized bookshops. Conning Books in Strand and the Serpentine Gallery. Also with Donlan Books in the East End of London, and obviously through the website as well. You can ask for them. The web, my personal website, which is www.kennethpostdoc.com.
Great, and there'll be a link on here to that as well. But this independent press that you started, that also sounds like an act of resistance, and I'm just wondering, are you and Pedro also publishing works of other authors, or what's the scope of the independent press?
That was the original idea, to be able to open, but I just had to concentrate on my rehab, and I just didn't have time to pursue that. It takes a lot of time to get authors on board on the same project. So now this independent press, I've transformed it into an art project in which I will publish 10 books under this press, close the company or close the press, and then rebrand them and repackage it and maybe translate them and put them into a box and sell them somewhere else or distribute to something. So it's an idea of reworking the work.
And it's also an idea that's quite long range. You're talking about a kind of far-reaching goal. When you've completed this series of books, might take quite a while.
Yeah, it could be 5 years. Yes, I'm playing the long game here.
I like that. And that also seems, you know, if I'm not overusing the word, an act of resistance, because, of course, that's not normally how artists, poets, and creative, you know, artists work. It's usually often quite short term, and long term, you know, would have a different meaning, certainly not 5 years. So that also sounds like a different way of approaching the craft, the art, but also a different way of approaching life.
It definitely is. It's a choice. Another part is it's been forced upon me. You know, it's been the way that I've had to adapt to my current condition. It's another ambivalence, another polarity. You know, you play this long game. Obviously, you feel that you need to give a meaning to that time. So, the idea of reworking the work is something that I constantly come back to.
Well, it sounds like it also addresses the issue of time itself. Like you're saying, this period of time, this stretch of time that the work isn't simply standing on its own. There's also the context of the time in which it was created and the length of the work.
Yeah, and it's being nomadic not only in a geographical sense, but also in a time sense. That's what is interesting to me. And sometimes I abandon the work for a couple of months and then I come back to it. The literary establishment, it's focused towards things that can sell, that can be marketed. And there's been an explosion of small presses in the U.S. and the U.K. I was surprised that in Iceland there's all these small presses of poetry, because, as you were saying, there's this magical connotation to life in Iceland, of like mythical creatures, gnomes, you know, and the fairies that still supposedly inhabit the land. And this multiple series of presses, small presses that, you know, editions of 100, editions of 75, and you find them around some certain books in Reykjavik. I was truly astounded by that. And I think that for me is a much truer sense of writing poetry than trying to get a literary agent to promote it and go in endless tours to universities and reading in front of mostly bored students, but because I've done it before and I've seen the way it is done, it's trying to avoid being too academic and being more adventurous with it.
I like that. That makes sense to me. I really enjoyed talking to you about this. In closing, I often ask people what book they're reading now, or books. It could be off topic or anything at all. But what are you reading at the moment? I can ask.
The Medium is the Message by Marshall McLuhan. And at the same time, I'm reading Jackson McLowe's Light Poems, which I definitely recommend. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know that, and I will look it up. Kenneth, I really enjoyed talking with you today. I want to thank you for taking the time to read and talk to me about your work.
No, thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.